Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Johnson with a jumper. Off iron. Ball comes down. Dragic throws it up. No. Oh, I kept it in. No. This is a killer loss for the Pistons.
It was a must-win, or as close to a must-win game as a regular season gets you. Our team fought hard, and you know, it's tough to lose like that, and it's tough for me because I could have made better decisions. We played better. We played harder. We fought. Still didn't shoot the ball very well. It's a game we should have won. Yeah, it's tough because a couple of different decisions by me, and we would have won the game. Sort of worn him down and worn us down is it is the year of Reggie. That's all we talk about every day. Well, first, he was injured. When's he coming back? Do you like the way he's playing? Do you need to make a change? Now, is he going to play? I mean, it's all we talk. You know, we lost a really tough basketball game tonight. He wasn't playing. That's not what we need to talk about right now.
I didn't make the decision. Anytime you can't do something that you love to do, I want to go out there and compete at the highest level each and every day, whether it be practice, whether it be playing games, and that's what we're compensated for, and that's what we're paid for as players, is to go out there and have a warrior mentality. I want to run through the wall each and every day and find a way to get better. Definitely like to lead my troops and play. But, organization, coach, also they have a job as well, and they're compensated and they're paid to do their jobs. Definitely felt like it was best when they told me for me to get some rest in them. I trust in them. I trust in their decision. Whenever I'm allowed to play again, I'm definitely going to cherish each and every moment on the court and play like it's my last.
A lot of times they only have one big on the court, so they're playing small with four perimeter players, one big, and yet they look incredibly slow defensively. And that's really hard to do in the NBA because if you're small, you're supposed to contain the ball, you should be able to force some turnovers, and you should be able to run. And they're not doing those things right now. The concern is legitimate. I was one of these people that I just kept giving them the benefit of the doubt. Clearly, their ceiling is higher than anybody else's in the East. I'm not sure I can say that anymore with a lot of confidence, the way that they have played. I mean, how do you all of a sudden just flick a switch and you become that much better defensively? They have been horrific. They've been that bad. And, you know, it's not like they have somebody on the bench right now that's been out. They've got guys that can help them on the other end of the floor, but they're not going to all of a sudden have a guy, you know, hasn't played in 2 months, take the floor that's this shutdown defender.
We've been talking about this for the last 2 months. It's a great streak. We've been a part of it. We should be proud of it. Unfortunately, it's over. Just got to move on and look for the future.
We've all known we're in a tough spot here. Our focus is 100% been and will continue to be on making sure that this is a one-time deal, not an 8, 9, 10-time deal. And how do you do that? You do that by making sure you maintain the culture that's allowed that streak to continue for a long time.
Incredibly difficult to make the playoffs in this league, going back to, I forget when exact year it was the last one, but the early 90s, legitimate competitor for the Stanley Cup for a lot of years. It wasn't just a 4 or 5 year span. It's been over a 20-year span, and they've been legitimate contenders for the Cup. Kenny's done a tremendous job of managing the team and keeping it competitive on a yearly basis.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a great afternoon to you. Thanks so much for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Wow. Once again, you know, we hit this yesterday, and if it sounded like I was being conspiratorial, if it sounded like I was reading something into commentary that wasn't really there, I think we have our answer. I wasn't. I was right. It wasn't a resting period. It was a benching period, and it continued last night for Reggie Jackson and the Detroit Pistons. Stan Van Gundy said Reg is just not going, and they can couch it any way they want. You could tell Van Gundy did not want to talk about it because he did not play in the loss, but you can tell this isn't a rest thing. This is a we're done with this guy thing, at least temporarily. Not saying they're going to dump him. Not saying they're going to trade him. Not saying any of those things at all, but for now, it's we like Ish better, and that's the way that it's going to be, Pistons style. And guess what? Is Jim, Frank, is it just kind of straight up okay to say there will be no playoffs this year?
I think we've reached that point, sadly. I mean, I think we have.
That's, I mean, you know, what is it, 5 in a row now? 5 losses
it is
in a row?
5 in a row.
8 of 9 or 7 of 8?
5 in a row, 8 of 9. Last night's one was especially costly because that's the team in the 8th spot right now. So now that spread is 2.5 games, and Miami now tied the season series with the Pistons 2-2. And I have no idea what tiebreaker and how that works out after that. I forget which one would go into effect. But I'm just going to go ahead and assume that Miami holds that tiebreaker now.
Yeah.
Which makes it basically 3.5 if that's the case with 9 to play. It's sadly probably over.
How incredibly disappointing is this for Pistons fans? How incredibly angry should they be? And how much, dare I say... How much does Stan Van Gundy need to wear here? This is his team. He builds it. He picks the players, puts the roster together, coaches them. And it's a huge, if they don't make the playoffs, which I think I'm in agreement with you guys, that's why I asked, it's a huge step backwards after a playoff run, well, not a run, but an appearance last year, even though you got swept by the eventual champions. It was supposed to be better this year, maybe win a game or two in the first round. Lord knows maybe what the matchup would be if you get a 6 or a 7 and maybe actually win a first-round series in advance. But it was supposed to be, you know, part of the progression to positive things this year instead of a giant step backwards. How much of this does Stan Van Gundy wear, and does anybody intend to hold him accountable for that, or is he untouchable?
I will try to answer all three of those quick questions. First, the disappointed. Of course, you have to be disappointed. This was supposed to be a take-the-next-step-forward kind of season. It's why I said, and, you know, we continue to reference it, Bob, I said that this team might be good enough to be the number 4 seed back in preseason. So disappointed. Yeah, without question. This should have been a step forward season, not a step back, which it's turning into. Angry? Still not sure how angry one should be. I mean, let's face
it. Why? Why not? If it's a step back, and I agree that it is, and you're a paying customer, and you got Pistons gear, and you were excited by the first playoff appearance last year. And how many years had it been?
6, I believe.
And now this year it's back to no more playoffs.
Right.
Why shouldn't fans be angry?
I mean, that's when you word it like that, that's a good question. I think I guess when I'm weighing the two, disappointment should take more than anger because they're still... I mean, this franchise and team, believe it or not, is still in a better shape than a couple years ago when they were really down and maybe had just drafted Drummond. They hadn't even acquired Reggie Jackson, among others, for example, yet. And that's why I'm not sure how angry I'd be, because it's not like this was a title-contending team or anything. I would say, Bob, the real goal that we were thinking back in preseason was, okay, maybe take a step forward, higher seed, certainly win a couple games, if not win a first-round series. That's kind of where we thought the ceiling of this team should be.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm wording it for me. I'm much more disappointed than I am angry. As for the third question, how much should Stan Van Gundy, how much should be on his shoulders considering his role as head coach and front office for this team at the same time, that whole deal? Yeah, he's got to start wearing some of that. Absolutely have to commend him for some of the things he did after taking over this franchise, highlighted by the just cutting of Josh Smith. I know all Pistons fans from a couple years ago remember that one.
Sure.
And some of the other moves that they made to get the team that was on the floor towards the end of last year, the one that made the playoffs, and that's the one that that they more or less brought back in for this year. So he still, you know, needs to be commended for that part, because this Pistons franchise was not in that great of a state just 3-4 years ago. But now that some of these moves maybe aren't working, the whole Reggie Jackson discussion, which I'm sure we'll get into more here in a bit, he's got to have some culpability here, because he's signing off on these types of decisions too. And we're seeing on the floor, you know, it's not working. And not just the Reggie thing. Remember, Andre Drummond's name got floated at trade deadline.
That's right.
I've speculated to you on this very program, was it really a good idea to make, you know, Drummond maybe your kind of other centerpiece? I mean, his offensive capabilities.
Max contract,
yeah,
right?
Max contract guy, but his offensive capabilities are limited. He's atrocious from the line. Yeah, he cleans up the glass. There's no doubt about that. But for his stature, he is not the elite defender on top of his bad offense that he needs to be. So that's just two examples right there. But those are the two guys you're supposed to be building around.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think there are some questionable decisions that were made there. What about you, Frank?
I don't think it's worthy of being fired. I don't think he needs to be fired or anything this offseason.
No, not saying that yet.
Right.
But is the discussion going to be had of is the program, the franchise, moving forward at the speed that it should be? And obviously this year, if it turns out the way that it is now, it's not moving forward at all at any speed. It's a step backwards. And at what point does ownership or do fans start to say, you know, maybe new direction is called for here? And I'm not saying it would be this off season, but he, for all intents and purposes, to my understanding, you know, Stan is just kind of revered as some sort of a god, a savant. This is one of the best in the game, one of the best talent evaluators, one of the best motivators, one of the best coaches, one of the best sound bites, one of the best X's and O's guys, strategists, talent evaluator. I think I hit that one already.
Yep.
That he's all that as if he's got 11, Phil Jackson's 11 rings. And I'm just wondering, at what point do people say, hey, maybe there is, a time that we should be looking at, and if we don't see the progress and the speed and the development that we expect to see in the next X number of seasons, and fill that in, you know, how much does this one strike against, you know, is that a strike against him? Is it two of these in a row, or is it, you know, another near miss next year, or a first round exit again next year, which would essentially mean you would have a three-year run with no progress because you already had a first round exit last year. Now a no playoff this year. If you do it again next year, it's 3 years of the same thing or worse. At what point do people start to say, This isn't the way. This isn't the direction. Frank, you got thoughts on that?
Yeah, I will disagree with Kush. If I'm a Pistons fan, I'm pretty livid right now, especially with how the end of this season has played out. The team made it to the playoffs last year. Again, like we've been saying this whole show, early round exit, but everybody was still kind of high up in spirits. It's a young team. They put up a pretty good fight in the first round. And then to come into where we are now, and the regression that's taken place, Reggie Jackson just sitting on the bench, and if I'm a Pistons fan, I almost feel lied to from a couple days ago. Yeah, Reggie Jackson's just not feeling 100%. Yeah, because he's not playing. He can't make the plays. Just call it what it is and say, this guy is not the guy we thought he was, and when the pressure's there, he can't make the play.
Let's listen to that again, and that's good that you said that, too, and I think I can fire that off from here, but this is a little bit more of what Stan Van Gundy said after the game about Reggie Jackson.
Sort of worn him down and worn us down is, it is the year of Reggie. That's all we talk about.
Can you hear the disdain in his voice when he says that?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's not just, you know, like, oh, yeah, we've talked a lot about Reggie. It's not a positive way that he's saying this. It's like, Jesus, why does everything have to be about Reggie? Reggie, Reggie, we've worn it down. You've worn it down. It's the year of Reggie. It's all about Reggie. And he's not saying that with, with a positive vibe, if you will.
Sort of worn him down and worn us down is, it is the year of Reggie. That's all we talk about every day. Well, first he was injured. When's he coming back? Do you like the way he's playing? Do you need to make a change? Now is he going to play? I mean, it's all we talk. You know, we lost a really tough basketball game tonight. He wasn't playing. That's not what we need to talk about right now.
That's fair. That's fair. What Stan Van Gundy said there is fair. This isn't what we need to talk about right now. We lost a tough basketball game. Let's talk about that. He didn't play. Let's talk about guys who did play. Let's talk about the situation as it is right now. I think that's fair for Stan Van Gundy to say. Now the question is, exactly what does it mean long term? Because we all agree that this was not a positive thing that he said. Yesterday, when we talked about, hey, look at that, Reggie Jackson didn't play against the Knicks. They were resting him. And we joked, resting him for what? And then we listened to it and broke it down line by line. It was pretty clear he was benching him. He's not making plays he should be able to make. We'll go ahead and throw fatigue at it in order to kind of save face a little bit and not embarrass the guy too much. But it's he's not doing his job very well. Now that he sits two straight games in a playoff push, if you can call the losing that they're doing, but it is the last, you know, eight games of the season. So it's a playoff push. If you're going to make it, you got to win probably six or seven out of the eight and hope that some other things happen for you. and he's not playing again. So it's clearly not rest. It's clearly benching. And Reggie Jackson pretty much acknowledged it as much with his post-game comments.
Sort of worn him down.
I already heard from you. I want to hear from Reggie now. Hold on.
You need to make a change. Now is he going to play? I mean, it's all we talk. You know, we lost a really tough basketball game tonight. He wasn't playing. That's not what we need to talk about.
Okay, here's Reggie. My apologies.
I didn't make the decision. Anytime you can't do something that you love to do, I want to go out there and compete. I'm at the highest level each and every day, whether it be practice, whether it be playing games, and that's what we're compensated for, and that's what we're paid for as players, is to go out there and have a warrior mentality.
That's the right answer for him.
Yeah, it is.
You know, he's got to say something like that anyway. We're compensated to get out there and play and have the warrior mentality. So he's kind of saying, if this is a rest thing, bull crap, I want to play. It's my job. It's what I'm compensated for. It's what I'm supposed to do is to play. So if this is a rest thing, but you can clearly understand when he said it wasn't my decision.
And it should be pointed out, these are his first comments public since the first benching 2 games ago. He's not made available to the media after the other game. He was after last night. So we should throw that in there for context.
Which is important to hear from him.
Run through the wall each and every day and find
one more time.
I want to run through the wall each and every day and find a way to get better. Definitely like to lead my troops and play. And, organization, coach, also they have a job as well, and they're compensated and they're paid to do their jobs. Definitely felt like it was best when they told me for me some rest in them. I trust in them. I trust in their decision whenever I'm allowed.
See, I mean, and you can tell by his tone, just like you can tell by Stan's tone, that he's not thrilled with having to answer these questions because he's not thrilled with this guy right now. You can tell by Reggie Jackson's tone when he talked about how, you know, hey, they're paid to make decisions too, and if they say rest, well, then, you know, you got to trust them that they're making. It's clear that he doesn't believe it. His tone is clear that it's not about rest. And it's not about fatigue. It's about, you know, I got benched, and I'm not happy about it.
He's saying it the right way. He's not throwing anybody under buses or anything.
Exactly, he can't. I mean, he can't do that.
He's in no position to.
The situation worse, obviously, for Reggie Jackson.
Whenever I'm allowed to play again, I'm definitely going to cherish each.
There's the line.
Whenever I'm allowed to play again, I'm.
Whenever I'm allowed to play again. Not like whenever I feel refreshed, whenever my fatigue wears off. Whenever they're done resting, whenever I'm allowed to play again, in other words, I'm not being allowed to play right now, and it's not, again, it's not a matter of fatigue, it's a matter of performance, it's a matter of efficiency, it's a matter of getting it done, it's a matter of production.
Whenever I'm allowed to play again, I'm definitely going to cherish each and every moment on the court and play like it's my last.
I'm going to cherish every moment that I'm on the court and play it like it's my last. Because you know what? It very well may be, at least as a Piston, the way things are going there. All right, so there's just a little bit from the montage, the Pistons side of the montage there with yet another loss at the buzzer. The Pistons just continued struggle. Reggie Jackson is a story. Make no mistake about that. We'll get in more depth on that coming up at about 4:05 when we talk to Aaron McMahon of
MLive.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So we will do that then. Meantime, we do have some other things to get into, and I'm going to do that after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which is coming your way. And and that includes a little bit more in yesterday's very brief discussion on the Adam Silver comments, in which Adam Silver has said there will be a female coach in the NBA, and it's his job. He makes this his job to make sure that happens sooner rather than later. How do you feel about that? I've got a little bit of a question on that, and I also have a little bit of skepticism, too, because I don't think he's right. And I know Becky Hammon is a top assistant with the San Antonio Spurs, learning the game from 5-time world champion Greg Popovich, and she might be the person. But I'm telling you, I don't see it happening anytime soon. Unless Popovich retires, takes over as the full-time GM, and hires her himself there in San Antonio, I don't see it happening anytime soon. I want to get into that story a little bit coming up as well. You know what else I'm excited about? I'm excited about golf, of course. And how about Dustin Johnson, the way he's playing? He's going to cost you a pretty penny if you pick Dustin Johnson for your fantasy golf team, but it's going to be worth it. Yes, you heard me right. Fantasy golf with FanDuel just launched. If you love fantasy sports, and I've told you about fantasy football, basketball, and baseball in the past, you love golf and you love fantasy and you love winning money, then you want to play fantasy golf at FanDuel. It's easy. Pick 8 golfers for your team. Stay under the salary cap. Again, the best golfers with the highest world rankings are going to cost the most. And then you score points for their eagles, birdies, pars, and more. Something for everybody. Lots of contests to choose from, starting at just $1. Watch your score live and win cash prizes. So hurry up and submit your golf lineup before tee off Thursday morning for any given event. getting excited for fantasy golf. That's what I'm doing. By the way, I'm also excited for fantasy baseball. Opening day is Sunday, and that means daily fantasy baseball is back as well. Don't miss Tuesday's $500,000 MLB Super Rally Contest with $100,000 to first place. It is amazing. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Experience the excitement of fantasy sports like never before and try fantasy golf. It's going to make the tour so much more fun. To get started, new users get FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack, valued at up to $50. That's five free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. Just finish in the top half and you win cash. To get your five free entries, go to FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button and enter the promo code FRANCE. That's my name, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com with the promo code FRANCE. Void where prohibited. Let's get going on fantasy golf together, and we're right back after this.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed, as we roll onward, 3:35 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Don't forget our Twitter feed, which is Sports Radio 106.5, and our Facebook page, which is 106.5 The Ticket. Follow us or like us on both of those places, and make sure that you stay in touch with us as we share conversation, not only when we're on the air, but obviously even after the show ends. We like to stay engaged with listeners. So if you got something to say, you want to say, by all means, do it. Join us there. I put this, as a matter of fact, I was the one who did it yesterday. Excuse me. I did this yesterday on our Twitter feed, and that was just put up a quick poll, which asked the question, do you think Adam Silver is right that, A, there will be a female coach in the NBA soon? And then second of all, and probably more to the point, even if it did happen, whether it be gimmick, you know, a gimmick or not, do you think she would be successful? And I'm not suggesting that it shouldn't, she shouldn't be or couldn't be. I'm asking, will she be? Is essentially the poll that we put up yesterday. So I'm kind of curious to see how you feel about it. Adam Silver is the commissioner. We know he is a very, very progressive, politically progressive-minded individual. I'm not bringing politics into the equation other than to say that Adam Silver has brought politics into the NBA. It's why the All-Star Game was in New Orleans this year instead of in Charlotte, North Carolina, where it was supposed to be. He's very politically minded. So I think there's something here that's at work when he says he feels like it's his job, it's his responsibility to make sure that there is a female coach in the NBA, you know, sometime sooner rather than later, to phrase it the way that, to phrase it the way he phrased it. I think there is a political motivation there for him, but that's fine. The question is, you know, do you think that somebody could be successful? And right now, it didn't get a ton of votes because I put it right literally on as we left the air yesterday, so I didn't get much of a chance to promote the question. Adam Silver says there will be a female coach sooner or later. Would a female coach succeed in the NBA? But of the number of votes that we did get, 56% of them said yes, she could be because coaching is coaching. And 44% said no, she wouldn't be successful because players won't respect her. And that's the side that I come down on. Again, not saying that it's right or wrong. I've got a 15-year-old daughter. And I would like to think that she could do anything that she wants to do. She could be the president of the United States. She could be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. She could be a foreman on a construction site if she wanted to be. And yes, she could be a basketball coach coaching boys or men someday. I like to think that any of those things can happen because people are people. But I also am a realist, and I've been in enough locker rooms at the high school level, the college level, and yes, at the professional level in the course of my broadcasting career over 20 years, to know what locker rooms are like, to know what players are like, to know what testosterone-filled rooms are like. And I can tell you that the testosterone-filled rooms would be a little bit thrown off by the presence of a female head coach trying to tell them what to do. I know what egos look like and sound like in the professional ranks. In basketball, in baseball, and in football. And while football seems to be, I haven't really done any hockey. And by the way, we will talk a little bit about the Red Wings and the end of the 25-year streak. Very, very sad to see it end, but boy, it really kind of gives you an appreciation for it once it's over. It's kind of like, isn't that what they say about grandparents? You don't realize how much you miss them until they're gone. That's probably the same thing with the streak. Everybody has got used to the Wings being in the playoffs, and you don't really recognize how great it was until suddenly the streak is gone.
I got some fun numbers on that, by the way.
And I look forward to those too, Jimmy. But to the point here, I've been in almost all of the locker rooms, save for the hockey locker rooms, and I can just tell you that it would be a hard thing. The language alone that the guys would feel like they have to curb in the presence of a female coach, simply out of natural born chivalry. Truthfully. I mean, are there some people who could give a rat's behind and are just rude people who use profanity in the presence of women and children? Yeah, there are. But for most men, I believe, and maybe I'm just kind of being a little bit naive here, but most men have a natural chivalry. You know, we'll curse in front of one another. We'll drop F-bombs in front of one another. Tell off-color jokes in front of one another. Brag about, you know, and I'm talking about young guys in their 20s here, okay? Not everybody, but brag about sexual conquests in front of one another. And if they realize that a female heard it, they're like, oh, God, I'm sorry. And they feel apologetic, and they stop. I can't imagine a locker room filled with 12 to 15 professional basketball players would be a comfortable one if they felt like they had to walk on eggshells, because they never know when the female is about to walk in the room. The head coach, by the way, and they have to watch their language or their attitude or whatever it is that they're doing that they're just not comfortable doing in front of women, but they are comfortable in doing in front of men. And whether it's on the sideline, whether it's on the practice floor, whether it is in the locker room, wherever it might be, I just think it would be very, very difficult. And once a couple of players start to get uncomfortable, I promise you, here's what would happen. They would make it their mission to make her uncomfortable to the point where she didn't want to do it anymore, and eventually there would be a parting of the ways. Because they would rather have it go back to, you know what, we can just do our thing and do it our way when it's all guys around here. But you start putting a woman in charge, and I think, unfair as it might be to her, they might not appreciate the way they have to change their lives, change the way they handle themselves while on the job. I don't want to say change their lives and make it too melodramatic. Change the way they handle themselves while they are on their jobs. Frank Cargano, Jimmy Cushlin, thoughts? Oh, and by the way, 866-240-1065. Sometimes we get talking to ourselves. I want to hear you. Do you think a female, and if you're a female sports fan, by the way, weigh in on this. Tell me I'm wrong. Don't tell me I'm sexist, though, because I'll get irritated. That's one of the things. It's one of the reasons why it's going to be hard to get an owner/GM to make this call and to pull the trigger and bring a female on as the head coach of their team. Because once she is criticized in the newspaper, on talk radio, on blogs, on Facebook, on Twitter, etc., once that happens, there is going to be a, you can't say that, she's a woman, you sexist pig, you. You wouldn't be hard on her like that. You'd give a male coach more time than you're giving this woman, et cetera, because of sexism. It goes on all the time. So it goes on in politics. You could say something extraordinarily critical about an elected official, I should say, who happens to be a male, especially if it's a white male, and it's, hey, that's just part of the game. It's politics. It's an ugly business. Say the exact same thing about somebody who's a female or a minority or, God forbid, a minority female, you know, two protected classes there, and it's you sexist, racist pig, you. That's just the nature of today's America. If you hire a female and put her in charge of males, and then somebody criticizes her, says something to her, does something to her, blah, 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 it's going to be so much worse than it would have been if it had just been David Blatt. Can't we just rip David Blatt and get him out of town? Can't we just rip, I don't know, Randy Whitman? Just pick your guy who's been bounced around until they finally found a place. You do that to a female, and it's going to come with all kinds of other negative ramifications. And that's why, and one of the reasons why I think Silver's wrong. It's not going to happen anytime soon unless he forces it to happen. Guys,
you know, thinking about this, I'm not sure how soon, you know, what's his definition of soon, because when I hear soon, I think within the next 5 years, and I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
So I don't think soon is going to happen
unless, like I said, Pop retires.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
Pop retires and stays on as a front office executive in San Antonio. And tells the owner, I want Becky to take over for me. She's my hand-picked successor. He would have that kind of stroke. He would have that kind of pull, that kind of cachet. You know, because they'll listen. In the same way that if Bill Belichick wanted to leave but wanted to stay with the Patriots organization as an advisor. Chances are very good Bob Kraft would say, hey, Bill, who do you want to take over? And Bill would say, this is who I want to take over. And they'd say, done. And I could see Popovich doing that with Becky Hammon because he has been so vocal in his support of her and defense of her. You remember, was it last summer or the summer before when she coached the Spurs Summer League team and they won the Summer League championship?
I think it was last summer.
Was it last summer?
I think so.
He's been very, very vocal in support of her, so I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
And so if that happens, Jim, then it could be in the next 5 years.
Yeah,
or eight or ten, or depending on how much longer Popovich wants to
play. And that's the only way that something like that could happen, you know, in the next 5 years, especially if what we're talking here is an NBA head coach, which I imagine that's what we're talking here. So,
yes.
So if, yeah, the Becky Hammon situation down in San Antonio would be the only way I could see it happening in the next, you know, 5 years or so.
Especially because of what I just said about the locker rooms and the players.
Yeah.
And the practice floors and the team flights and, I mean, all, the whole nine yards.
Sure.
When they're together. They don't want to have to watch what they say because there's a woman around.
Right.
But this group of players will have already had that woman around.
Yeah.
And so they've had, you know, she's not been in charge of them. She's been an assistant coach. You know, but Pop is the boss. You know, he's the godfather, if you will. But it would be different if she suddenly assumed the role of Pop. But at least they would have said,
in such a situation,
we've had this experience. She's been with us.
Yeah.
And so there's at least
And I think the Spurs brass would be
a comfort factor, at least an experience factor.
And I think on top of that, you know, if it were the situation you're describing, then the Spurs brass, I think, would be, you know, kind of banking on the overall organization, right down to all the players' professionalism and how they conduct themselves, which is something I think we'd all acknowledge about the San Antonio Spurs for quite some time now. So they'd probably be banking on that too.
Yes.
You know, should that happen?
No doubt.
If it's not Becky Hammon, though, the only kind of situation I can think of, and I don't even have an actual person that would fit this mold, is you would need someone like the late Pat Summitt. You would need to have somebody like that, somebody who's known and respected in basketball.
And there is no one like
that. Aside. And right, that's why the best reference I could think of is the now late Pat Summitt.
And even that wouldn't have worked.
No, I don't think so.
Because
that would have had to happen 15 years ago, first off.
Because Pat Summitt, for all of her greatness, was a college coach. Forget
sure.
about the fact that she only coached females and she hasn't coached men. It was on the college level.
Sure.
And as we all know, great college coaches don't always rise up to the NBA and set the world on fire.
Oh, yeah.
John Calipari, one of the greatest college coaches going, went to the NBA, failed. Rick Pitino, one of the best college coaches of his era, NBA, failed. Mike Krzyzewski, one of the greatest college coaches, didn't even bother trying that mess. It's a different world up there.
Yeah. And that's
Roy Williams.
Too.
I mean, you could go on and on. You know, Billy Donovan is doing all right now with, I think, I want to say the fifth seed Thunder. You know, he, of course, is best known for his championships at Florida in the college level. But by and large.
Him and Brad Stevens, that's about it.
Thank you, with Butler, right. By and large, you know, college coaches don't fare very well on the NBA level, and they're men who are used to coaching men. Now take a Pat Summitt or somebody like that who's used to coaching women and say, now you're going to transition not only from the college game to the pro game, which is an entirely different animal, teaching and preparing guys
sure.
to get ready not for 35 games, and that's in a best-case scenario if you go to the NCAA Final Four, but for 82 regular season games. I mean, the changes are just immense.
Yeah.
But you add to that the difference between coaching one sex versus another sex now on top of it. I just don't think it would work. I think it would only work with an assistant coach in the NBA right now, like a Becky Hammon, who's getting tons of experience learning the NBA game from a great teacher of the game like Popovich, and doing it in the same – her head coaching job would have to be in the same place
yeah.
where they are used to her.
Sure.
You know,
if the Bucks wanted
to hire her away from San Antonio, for example, it probably doesn't work.
No,
the Bucks players aren't used to this sort of thing.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. That's why it's either Becky Hammond or a scenario with someone completely unnamed that would probably work worse than the possible Becky Hammond scenario in San Antonio. So that's why I don't think it would be soon. You know, of course, when it comes to basketball, this is the only sport we can even – I think even legitimately, whether anyone listening would want this or not. That's about the only sport of the four that this could be a legitimate discussion.
Well, yeah, because there is no women's football, so you can forget about
right.
it. There is no women's baseball, and that's correct. Softball is a very different game than baseball. Even though they still use three strikes and bases,
right.
it's very, very different.
And there is a women's hockey, but it's too new and it's too different, really, than the NHL.
Incredibly
is.
Different.
Yeah, like so no you're checking,
right.
for
but,
example.
But, I mean, at least in women's basketball,
yeah.
It's there. It's,
yes.
It's in the conscience of the public, or the consciousness of the public,
sure.
is, I guess, the best way to say that.
Yeah.
You know who Gino Auriemma is. You know who the UConn women are. You know maybe two or three of the top teams, and I want to say maybe Stanford and Notre Dame are among them. I don't know for sure. I'm guessing here. Oh, I did see that South Carolina's women are in yeah. the Final Four. Because and that was a story only because the South Carolina men are a Cinderella
yeah.
team in the Final Four. So it made news. Other than that, I truly don't know the other two teams.
No.
It's UConn and South Carolina. Do you know anybody else?
No, I'd have to look that up.
Okay. So that's a stretch anyway. But at least it's there, and women can play it at the Division I level, and is for what it's worth. The WNBA is there. So at least there's a chance at it, but there is no other sport where this could possibly happen.
Right.
So, Frank, anything to add?
Yeah, the one problem I really have with
Frank's
this
story, it over there. Yeah, what's
I know,
my turn?
I know. I'm always riled up now. I don't know. It's just one of those days.
No, it's all good. Go ahead.
And I think you'll agree with me on this. Why is Adam Silver making this about him? Why is this his? Like, this is his.
I think
duty.
I already answered.
Like
that.
I have to be the one to make this happen. If it's going to happen, it has to happen like we just laid it out. It has to happen organically, where everybody in the organization has 100% confidence in somebody a la Becky Hammon to take the reins over and get the job done. Because as far as fans are concerned, I don't think they could care less as long as their team is winning and they're still in the spotlight making money. But why does Adam Silver have to make this about him and his vendetta?
Well, it's not a vendetta, but it is a mission for him.
Yes.
Because, as I said before, he wears his politics on his sleeve. He's a politician in large part. He is the one who spoke so incredibly strongly is not the right word because that's not a word. But he spoke with incredible passion and intensity about North Carolina and their bill, their law, to essentially say boys use the boys' rooms, girls use the girls' rooms. We don't want to have any messes or problems or anything else on our hands. Oh, my God, how terrible. This is discriminatory, and as long as North Carolina is discriminatory, the NBA will not be your friend. We're going to pull the All-Star game and the All-Star weekend and the millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars it generates for the local economy from your city of Charlotte. The hell with your workers. Because I say politically, this is something I disagree with. I'm putting that game somewhere else. And as we all know, it ended up in New Orleans this year. He's a very, very outspoken guy on political social issues. So to that end, he's making this, Frank, a social issue, a social justice issue, if you will. We are all about inclusion. We're all about diversity. We're all about tolerance. We're all about opportunity. And while it's fine to be for
right,
all of those things.
That's all okay, but don't try to force anything.
Bingo. Thank you. That was exactly my next line. We read my mind. While it's fine to be for all of those things, you have to let those things happen organically. And naturally, if they're going to happen, they're going to happen. You can't force them. And that's what he did when he said, quote, I can't quote it, and I got to paraphrase it because I don't have the article open in front of me anymore. But if I recall it from yesterday, it was something to the effect of, it's my job to make sure that this happens sooner rather than later. So, therefore, it's clearly, you know, the reason why is, again, he's wearing his own politics on his sleeve. And to me, that's the wrong approach. I'm not a big fan of that. All right, if you've got thoughts on it, 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, on to the next item. Josh Gordon is suddenly back in the news in the National Football League. Why? Because apparently the Browns, who said last season, Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Browns, said last season that they are moving on from the Josh Gordon saga. I don't know how many times that he's been suspended or tested positive or violated the league's substance abuse policy. I want to say he's got more of those than he does touchdown catches, but that's not fair because he did have one monster year in which he had a ton of touchdown catches.
Right.
and led the league in receiving yards. But he's got a ton of them is the point. And after the most recent one last offseason, last training camp, when he was supposed to, he was applying for reinstatement, and then essentially said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this, so I'm going to go ahead and go back into rehab. And we all know how that goes down. He knew he was going to fail another test, so he said, I'm not even going to bother taking it. I'm going back into rehab. So they kind of said, we're done with him. And I said, good, it's long overdue. It's about time. And I don't want to hear about addiction this and, you know, disease concept that. You know what, man? You got a multi-million-dollar contract at your feet. You have a 10 to 20 to 30 to 40, 50, 60 million-dollar contract waiting 1 year out. And if you have another big year when you become a free agent, and you can't stop the weed. You can't stop smoking blunts or hitting bongs or whatever it is that you do. You know what? That's a personal decision. That's a personal choice. Don't give me the stuff about you being sick. I don't like that stuff. So to me, I was glad the Browns were going to move on. Yet here we are today. Browns head of football operations, Sashi Brown, left open the possibility of Josh Gordon returning to the club, but sounded a lot like an analytics expert seeing maybe another draft pick flash before his eyes. Quote, Josh, assuming that he would play at the level where we started to see glimpses of last preseason, and certainly when he was in the league before, would be a talent I think no team in the NFL would turn down if he got back in. Our decision with Josh is just understanding where he is in his process and being able to add him. But we're not in a position at the wide receiver to turn down a guy like Josh if we feel like he has settled himself. Now, it's a separate question, but Josh is going to have an opportunity to reapply to the NFL, and at that time, we'll make a decision when we know what's going on, end quote. So hearing that, Jim, you're a Browns fan, like I am. Hearing that, do you think the Browns are trying to kind of set the table with the fans, if you will, saying, hey, you know, we are interested, and so if we do this, don't take it by a big surprise. Don't be taken by surprise, I should say. We're going to make sure he's right first, but if he's right, there it is in Sashi Brown's words, we're not in a position at wide receiver to turn down a guy like Josh. Or do you see this as the kind of trade bait suggesting that, remember, quote, here's the other part of the quote, no team in the NFL would turn him down if he got back in. Meaning, you know, he may be ready to go, but we're not ready to take that leap again because we're tired of the mess. Give us a decent pick for him, and maybe you can take him from us.
I think it's a little of both, honestly. I think
it is. You think they'd play him again?
I kind of do if, say, he gets reinstated. He's going to start to serve a small suspension. Well, it's 4 games no matter what, I believe. So that would be weighing on any trade possibility, not to mention, you know, what would any other team, you know, give back for that.
Can I say this? Let me say this so that you have it in your head before you continue your comment.
Okay.
And you're right, by the way. He would still have to serve that 4-game suspension. That was
thought
the
so.
But I want you to think about this the most clear terms, because they're terrible terms, but in the clearest terms possible. Here's what we know about Josh Gordon. He has been under suspension for 43 of the Browns' last 48 games. Think about that. For the last 48 games, he has been declared ineligible by the league for 43 of them. And he has been banned in each, at some point or another, of each of the last 4 years. You know, they say, and it's an often repeated line in sports and in sports radio too, that the best kind of ability is what? Availability. Availability. He's not been available for 43 of the last 48 games, not because of injury, but because of idiocy. You really think that dealing with all of that, they would give him a helmet and a uniform and say, come on back in, we'll see if you're ready this time or if you're on your way back out again? I feel like they couldn't wait to get rid of him if he did come back and was cleared to play. The league said, okay, you're reinstated. I think they would dump him to another team in a heartbeat. Go ahead.
And I think they would if they can. But, we don't know what any possible market would be because those same things, you know, every other team sees all those same things that we've all seen for all this time. And
well, you know what it is? It's a Tony Romo situation. It's like with the Browns. I think every team knows that the Cowboys are not going to keep Tony Romo. Dak Prescott is their guy. And so it's a matter of, should we offer a pick in order to get him, or should we wait for them to release him?
Right.
Same thing. You know, everybody knows the Browns aren't going to keep him, so it's going to be, do we offer him a pick for him, or do we just wait for them to dump him, and then we pick him up?
Then we're back to the part about setting the table in case he actually ends up appearing in a Browns uniform, if everything goes right, which we got to put in a way small percentage, given this guy's history, of course. It kind of reminds me of, you know, what I've been hearing, you know, if you will, through the grapevine regarding the whole Brock Osweiler thing. Remember, right after they got him, then it was, like, immediately floated, and we've all kind of more or less stopped talking about it since then.
Yeah.
Who's floated that, hey, you know, they're going to turn him right around. This is like, think baseball money ball. Now I'm hearing things float around of, you know, we're going to try him out at, you know, in the OTAs coming up, and then, you know, maybe he'll still be here at camp. They're setting the table in case he actually ends up wearing the helmet in terms of Osweiler. And that's possible if they can't find anybody. And what you're hearing on Sashi Brown regarding Josh Gordon is the same kind of thing, because technically he is correct. If he's on the field and he is somehow correct, again, a very small possibility, yeah, he by leaps and bounds be the best Browns receiver. Well, there's no doubt about that.
You know what? To cross over sports and from real life into the movies all in one time, I'm going back to where Ricky Vaughn once played. Last league he played in was the California Penal. That should be the next league that Josh Gordon plays in.
Awesome.
All right, it's 4 o'clock. Let's get a timeout. Top of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. We got our high school athletes of the week to crown on the other side. We've also got Aaron McMahon joining us on the other side to get back into the NBA and talk a little bit about the Pistons, the season that apparently has been lost, a playoff push that did not materialize, and the mysterious resting of Reggie Jackson. That's coming up, too, as we continue in hour number 2 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We've been talking about this for the last 2 months. It's a great streak. We've been a part of it. We should be proud of it. Unfortunately, it's over. Just got to move on and look for the future.
We've all known we're in a tough spot here. Our focus is 100% been and will continue to be on making sure that this is a one-time deal, not an 8, 9, 10-time deal. And how do you do that? You do that by making sure you maintain the culture that's allowed that streak to continue for a long time.
Incredibly difficult to make the playoffs in this league, going back to, exact year it was the last one, but the early 90s, legitimate competitor for the Stanley Cup for a lot of years. It wasn't just a 4 or 5 year span. It's been over a 20-year span that they've been legitimate contenders for the Cup. Kenny's done a tremendous job of managing the team and keeping it competitive on a yearly basis.
A lot of times they only have one big on the court, so they're playing small with 4 perimeter players, one big, and yet they look incredibly slow defensively. And that's really hard to do in the NBA because if you're small, you're supposed to contain the ball, you should be able to force some turnovers, and you should be able to run. And they're not doing those things right now. The concern is legitimate. I was one of these people that I just kept giving them the benefit of the doubt. Clearly, their ceiling is higher than anybody else's in the East. I'm not sure I can say that anymore with a lot of confidence, the way that they have played. I mean, how do you all of a sudden just flick a switch and you become that much better defensively? They have been horrific. They've been that bad. And, you know, it's not like they have somebody on the bench right now that's been out. They've got guys that can help them on the other end of the floor, but they're not going to all of a sudden have a guy, you know, hasn't played in 2 months, take the floor that's the shutdown defender.
Johnson with a jumper. Off iron. Ball comes down. Dragic throws it up. No.
Oh!
He's attempted in. No! This is a killer loss for the Pistons.
It was a must-win, or as close to a must-win game as a regular season gets. Yeah. Our team fought hard, and
yeah, it's tough to lose like that, and it's tough for me
because I could have made better decisions. We played better, we played harder, we fought. Still didn't shoot the ball very well. It's a game we should have won. Yeah, it's tough because a couple of different decisions by me, and we would have won the game. Sort of worn him down and worn us down is, it is the year of Reggie. That's all we talk about every day. First he was injured. When's he coming back? Do you like the way he's playing? Do you need to make a change? Now is he going to play? I mean, it's all we talk. You know, we lost a really tough basketball game tonight. He wasn't playing. That's not what we need to talk about right now.
I didn't make the decision. Anytime you can't do something that you love to do, I want to go out there and compete. I'm at the highest level each and every day. I'm going to be practice, I'm going to be playing games, and that's what we're compensated for, and that's what we're paid for as players, is to go out there and have a warrior mentality. I want to run through the wall each and every day and find a way to get better. Definitely like to lead my troops and play. But organization, coach, also they have a job as well, and they're compensated and they're paid to do their jobs. Definitely felt like it was best when they told me for me to get some rest in them. I trust in them. I trust in their decision. Whenever I'm allowed to play again, I'm definitely going to cherish each and every moment on the court and play like it's my last.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, and the real question now is it his last? Could he have played his last minute? Or is he in the throes of his last minutes as a Detroit Piston? Probably not likely, but my oh my, the tale of Reggie Jackson, the saga of Reggie Jackson. What a strange, strange turn it has taken. Hour number two is underway right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. We go north of the state line once again, up into the D to talk a little more in-depth on the Pistons and this late-season collapse. Aaron McMahon covers the Pistons for MLive.com, joins us once again with some thoughts. Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm good. Good to be back, Bob.
Good to have you all the time, Aaron. We really appreciate your insight. Okay, you call it a benching, and they started out by calling this a rest. We played the comments yesterday from Stan Van Gundy talking about why Reggie Jackson wasn't going to play against the Knicks or didn't play against the Knicks. And, you know, he made it sound like fatigue. It's a fatigue thing. You know, he needs a rest, which, of course, reinvigorated the debate about resting players for playoff runs. Well, the Pistons don't have a deep playoff run in them if they made it at all. So it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And then we came to realize, you know what, this wasn't a rest. This was a benching. And then, of course, when he was benched for the second straight night, last night in the loss to the Heat, it was pretty clear that Stan Van Gundy has had just about enough of Reggie Jackson and the Reggie Jackson story. Why do you suppose they just aren't coming out and saying this is just DNPCD, coach's decision, that's it?
It's a good question, and it's one I think we've been trying to get here for a while. It's been interesting, and you played the comments before I came on here, but, you know, Stan's been very elusive in wanting to talk about Reggie, and this goes back, you know, months. You know, I remember when he was down and wasn't playing, and when he first came back, you know, Stan was real hesitant to say some things, and I don't know if it was a case of them not being sure.
Sorry about that.
Not being sure. Now you're fine. I don't know if it was a case of them not being sure if he was 100% ready to go. Or what it was, you know. In fact, we asked Reggie was asked the question last night. You know, did he think he came back too soon? And he answered the question kind of halfway, and he said he felt mentally ready, which told me that either A, he felt like he wasn't physically ready, or the team didn't think he was physically ready, but he wanted to go anyway. So I think, you know, the whole saga of him and this season's been a disappointment, to say the least, for the team and the organization. You know, this is a team that was supposed to build on the 44 wins they had last season in the eighth seed in the playoffs, and they just haven't been able to put it together. And I think part of it's in Reggie, and I think part of it's been other problems with the locker room and the team. And you can even throw Stan Van Gundy's name in there a little bit too. But with regards to Reggie, it's been a disappointment. The knee hasn't recovered like they once thought it would. And going back to your comment coming in, I'd be shocked that this is Reggie's the last game, you know, in the NBA. That being said, you know, he will be, you know, his future with the Pistons will definitely be discussed in the offseason, along with, I think, several other guys.
Yeah, and to clarify, I meant just his last minutes with the Pistons, not in the NBA. There'll be a place for him, no doubt about it. It just might not be as anybody's starting point guard anymore. But that's the disappointment with all this, Aaron, because as you know, and everybody knows, you know, he didn't like the idea of playing second fiddle as a point guard in Oklahoma City. He was never going to be the guy there, and he wanted to go to a place where he could be the guy and be the, you know, the playmaker, the ball distributor, the scorer, et cetera. And after the season he had last year, I mean, he was an all-star candidate, for God's sake. He was 18.8 points a game, and I can't remember, 6.5, 7 assists. Or whatever it was, this year has just been, like for the entire team, a massive step backwards. Now, it's one thing, obviously, when you have an injury, and he started the season with the injury. But it's another thing when he is declared to be fully healthy and he's going out there and playing as inconsistently as he has been. So what do you suppose is the reason for that, first of all? What do you suppose he means? And I'm reading your piece on MLive.com. He described his situation as being a shell of himself. What do you think it is that happened to him physically if he was declared when he came back, you know, 100% ready to go?
Yeah, I'm not convinced he was 100% ready to go. You know, going back to, he got a similar injection when he was in Oklahoma City. with the Thunder a few years ago. He went through the same situation. You know, he had the injection, but then he had time to sit out. It was over the summer. He had 3 or 4 months to recuperate and kind of come back as himself, as you would say, 100%. He didn't really get that this time. You know, he sat out, did his rehab like he was expected. I think it was 6 to 8 weeks, if I remember correctly. And then they kind of threw him back into the fire. It wasn't a slow return. They threw him right back in the starting lineup. He played his 30, 32, 34 minutes a game. It was like everything was good. And I think, and Stan hasn't said this, but I would be willing to bet Stan maybe regrets the way they brought him back. Maybe, I feel like maybe they should have eased him in a little bit. You know, maybe that means coming off the bench to start. Because if you recall correctly, when Reggie came back in early December, the Pistons had just won 3 straight games, two of which were on the road. They won a huge game in Boston, and it was with Ish Smith as a starting point guard. They were finally starting to gel around Ish. I believe they were 500 at that point.
Right.
So things were starting to turn around, and then you throw, you know, Reggie back in the starting lineup, and it changes everything. You know, with Ish, he was more of a distributor, more of a guy who was getting others involved. Whereas Reggie's more, you know, he wants his shots, he wants the ball. So it completely changes the offense. So I think had Stan got the opportunity to redo this thing, I think maybe they would have done it a little bit differently.
We're talking to Aaron McMahon of MLive.com about the Pistons and about the Reggie Jackson saga. Pistons lost their 5th in a row and their 8th in their last 9. This is obviously, a playoff push without the playoff part. They're supposed to be, you know, in the last 10 games making a run for the 8th or the 7th seed, and instead they just fall further behind. And it begs the question, is this the direction this team is supposed to be going right now? They made the playoffs last year for the first time in 6 seasons. It was expected they would take another step forward this season, and if they end the season on this kind of a terrible run, they're not going to make the playoffs. And really all of last year's progress becomes regression, at least as far as I'm concerned. Your colleague at MLive.com, David Mayo, wrote today that only Stan Van Gundy may be safe after the Pistons' abysmal late-season flop. So my question is given everything I just laid out, why is Stan Van Gundy considered to be so untouchable? Is it just because he's only he's still got 2 more years on his contract after this one? Or is he some sort of royalty that I'm not aware of where he can't be questioned about whether or not he's got this franchise headed in the direction it's supposed to be?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it's multi-pronged. Like you mentioned, he's got 2 years left on his contract. And I don't see the ownership group separating themselves from him. They seem to like him by all accounts. They believe in his direction, the way he handles things. Stan's very meticulous. You know, he looks at numbers. He takes input from many people around him. It isn't, believe it or not, it's not all him. So I think they like the direction he's had. You know, he's brought the organization. That being said, you know, like you said, they haven't gotten what they wanted out of this group. And I think you may see some offseason changes. Who or what or how or when, that remains to be seen. But several of these guys may, you know, we heard the rumblings prior to the trade deadline that, you know, the Pistons were trying to shop Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope becomes a restricted free agent at the end of the season, and it's up to the Pistons whether or not they want to bring him back. He's expected to field them close to a max deal. So they've got some decisions to make. I think to get rid of Stan right now after 3 years, and like you mentioned,
and mind you, Aaron, I want to be clear about something. I'm not calling for him to be fired. I'm not saying they should get rid of him after 3 years. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the conversation isn't even being broached yet. David essentially is saying it would take another year next year, like this year, before that conversation. I'm paraphrasing David Mayo. Before the conversation about Stan Van Gundy's employment would even be held. And I guess that's what I'm wondering. You know, is everybody as satisfied as the owners are? Do you think that the fans feel the same way? Hey, this guy is the guy. Last year's progress has become this year's regression.
No, I mean, there's been concern. I will say this, you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback from fans, you know, via email, Twitter, whatever the case may be, and they are upset. They're frustrated. They don't think, I think Stan's getting the most out of his roster, and that argument can be made. You know, that's absolutely probably 100% true. That being said, I think it's tough from an ownership standpoint. You know, keep in mind, this organization's gone through so many coaching changes in the last decade. You know, when Tom Gores came on, he's on his third coach. So I think he looks at it like, you know, we need to stick with this guy for a little while. Stan has stabilized things. You know, he came in, they struggled his first year, finally got in the playoffs last year, And I think you look at this more as a dip. You know, this isn't the end all be all. You know, this organization isn't as bad as it was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. So I think they're gonna ride with him at least another year. And I'd be surprised if Stan is gone at the end of the season. That being said, I think, you know, come next season, whatever changes or whatever non-changes they make, you know, that I think will be, next season will be the season to watch with regards to Van Gundy and this organization.
Aaron McMahon joining us from MLive.com, talking about the Pistons, talking about this collapse, 5 straight losses, 8 out of 9. And this was all when they were still, the streak started when they were in the playoffs, or at least at that point they were in at least the 8th spot. Jim Kushlin is with us as well. Jim, go ahead.
You know, and following up on this, you know, because I kind of agree with this assessment, I don't think he's going anywhere this offseason, regardless of how frustrated some fans may be by the kind of regression we've seen a little bit this year. But it also then leads to the obvious follow-up, which is, what's an acceptable next season to prevent this conversation from happening? Is it simply getting back to the playoffs where they were a year ago? Is it advancing farther in the playoffs? What would you see, Aaron, as the acceptable limit to prevent this question from coming up next year at this time?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely getting to the playoffs and probably contending to host a first round playoff series. You guys might recall, but just, you know, 10 days ago, the Pistons were the 7th seed and they were a game or two back of 6, and they were within the contention of the 5th seed. So Eastern Conference, you know, hasn't been great as we all know this season. And historically, you know, lately it hasn't been very good either. So I think, and Stan, I think, believes that this roster is better than it was last season. He hasn't been able to put it together. Guys haven't shot the way that maybe he thought they would. So I think going into next season, not only do the Pistons need to get in the playoffs, but they've got to, you know, show some improvement, whether it's a 5th seed, 6th seed, maybe a 4th seed. They need to work their way up the standings and be a team that they theoretically could contend for an Eastern Conference title. If none of that happens and, you know, they squeak in the playoffs again or, heck, miss the playoffs. And yeah, I think this time next season, we're talking about Stan Van Gundy and whether he returns for a 5th and final year.
Returning back to Reggie Jackson for a moment, Aaron, what's his contract status?
He's in the second year of a 5-year $80 million deal.
Okay, so it's not max deal, it's not max money, but it's a pretty hefty contract. Probably too difficult for them to move, which may be the answer to the question I'm about to ask you, and that is, if you had to predict, is he with the Pistons next year?
Yeah, I do think so. You know, you got to keep in mind, you know, obviously his value isn't what it was last season. Teams are obviously paying attention. You know, they've been watching. They have the video that they can see where Reggie is physically at this point. The Pistons reportedly trying to make some, you know, some offers prior to the deadline. They weren't happy with what they were getting in return. So the Pistons clearly value Reggie, I think, at what they saw him last season. Clearly NBA teams aren't going to look at that right now and believe that. So the Pistons either are going to have to change their value on Reggie or choose to stick with them, and I think they're going to. You know, I think they really believe if they give him an off season to rest and recuperate, he can be the guy that he was last year. And we've seen, I think, flashes of it a little bit here in the season. You know, there have been times where he's looked good. He had that burst off the dribble, the guy that we saw last year. But then, you know, if they play back to back or they play 2 games in 3 days, you really see Reggie wear down physically. And I think that's where the summer is going to be key. But no, I would be surprised if Reggie isn't in a Pistons uniform next season.
We're talking to Aaron McMahon, talking about the Pistons' late season collapse. How angry, we talked about this before you came on, Jim and I did, how angry should the fans be? Or is anger the wrong word? Should they be disappointed with the fact that, again, you know, Jim Kushlin predicted before the season started, as we do our preseason predictions all the time, he said, I think the Pistons could be good enough this year to advance from the 8th seed last year as they squeezed in before getting swept by the Cavaliers to the 4th seed this year. That's the kind of talent they have and the ability, the progress they ought to be able to make. Given that, and that's a lofty prediction, but that's what Jim had, although maybe others felt that way as well. And yet here we sit. And the season is ending miserably. So should the fans be angry? Should the fans be disappointed? Should they be disillusioned? Should they be questioning whether or not they do have the right roster or the right man in charge of it? What should be their takeaway from this season if this is how it ends?
Yeah, I think disappointed is the right word. You know, there have been some fans that have called for Stan McGunny to be fired or whatever the case may be. And my follow-up to them would be, you know, who else is better out there to do this? You know, Stan's had a long track record of success. He's made the playoffs every season but one. So he's done this, you know, he's won before, he's been successful. You know, Reggie's injury to start the season, I think, put a damper on things. It forced the Pistons really to kind of scramble and change the way they play basketball. So that changed things. Then, you know, I think you've got some contention in the locker room, and guys weren't fitting, guys weren't playing together. And that goes back to what I said earlier. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a change or two in the offseason to try and heal wounds and heal the camaraderie in the locker room. So I think disappointed is probably the best word. I would be, like I said, shocked if Van Gundy's gone. But at the same time, it's clear this group isn't meshing, isn't working together. And something I think needs to be done. Otherwise, we may be in the same situation next year.
Aaron McMahon breaking it down, talking Pistons basketball with us as the collapse continues. And what, eight left or seven left after last night?
Seven left,
mercifully so, by the way. You know, you lose two times in one calendar week to the Nets and then the Knicks, for God's sake. You know it's just not meant to be. Then, of course, the buzzer beater last night, it's kind of all falling apart, and it will be mercifully over seven games from now. Aaron, thanks so much. We'll have you on again after the season, if you're willing, so we can do kind of a postmortem on the way things went down.
Absolutely. Always good to meet you guys.
Thank you, Aaron. It's always a pleasure. Aaron McMahon joining us from MLive.com. Follow him and his Pistons work there online at at MLive.com. Hey, follow golf this season in a lot more fun way than you ever have before. You know, Jim, you and I have talked about this before, that the tour, while it does have so many incredibly young, talented guys that are on it, Jason Day and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, I mean, just some of the biggest names in golf, are still fun. It's not the same drama that there always is or was over the last 20 years with Tiger Woods being on top of the heap, right? Well, if you are feeling kind of like maybe you're missing that rush from golf, get online at FanDuel.com and play fantasy golf. You add the fun of fantasy team golf into the PGA Tour, and now you've brought back the drama that you were looking for. If you love winning cash, playing games on FanDuel, then try this. Pick eight golfers for your team, stay under the salary cap, and then you score points for eagles, birdies, pars, and more. You play against other people. There's something for everybody. Leagues start at just $1. Contests for just $1, all right? Watch your score live and win cash prizes. All you got to do is make sure you submit your lineup, your eight golfers, before tee off every Thursday morning before the start of an event. And oh, by the way, speaking of starting events, baseball's opening day is Sunday, and that means Daily Fantasy Baseball is back as well at FanDuel.com. Don't miss next Tuesday's $500,000 MLB Super Rally Contest with $100,000 to the first-place finisher. You know, over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel, and now you can get the new rush that is fantasy golf at FanDuel. Here's what you do. New users get FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack valued at up to $50 free. That's right, five free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. Just finish in the top half and you win cash. To get your five free entries at FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button and enter the promo code FRANCE. That's right, go to FanDuel.com, promo code FRANCE, F-R-A-N-T-Z, void where prohibited. Add more fun to your PGA Tour enjoyment with FanDuel Fantasy Golf. We're right back after this.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, good conversation with our friend Aaron McMahon there from MLive.com, talking a little Pistons. We've got a few other things we want to get into this last segment of the program. Before we do anything else, though, let's shine the spotlight of praise on our high school athletes of the week for this week for the girls. Excuse me, Mariah White of Toledo's Start Basketball. The senior led the Spartans with 14.4 points per game, 6.1 rebounds per game, and 3.1 steals per game this year. She's a Cleveland State commit. She's now a two-time City League Player of the Year. She led Start to a 22-3 record before the Spartans fell in the Division I District semifinals. For the boys, Justin Rotroff of Wasion Basketball. Rotroff led the Indians with 18 points, but Wasion was defeated back on Saturday for the Division II State Championship by Akron's St. Vincent St. Mary. That's LeBron James' alma mater, of course. 45-30, the Indians complete their magical postseason run by making the school's first-ever state championship game to go along with a 27-2 record, and will be only losing three players to graduation. One of the big names who will be back is Rotroff, who averaged 13.4 points per game and 8.2 rebounds per game this season. So they are your KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. Congratulations to both. And by the way, if you have a high school athlete you would like to shine the spotlight on, please tell us who they are. What school do they go to? What did they accomplish? Send all of that information to us at
athlete at 1065theticket.com.
Try that again because you might cut off the first part.
Fair enough. Athlete at 1065theticket.com.
Thank you very much, and we would love to announce the achievement and the accomplishments of your young athlete. Okay, I want to get into a couple of other items here in the final segment. I talked about this yesterday in the final segment, but not nearly enough. Frank Argano and Jim Cushlin are both in the studio with us. So, guys, feel free to weigh in on this, but I need to just go ahead and hammer this for a moment. Yesterday, we learned of this, that and there are a number of new rules, by the way, that the NFL has already put in place for next season, the competition committee, or they are still considering. For example, they have stronger enforcement of penalties now for what they are describing as very egregious hits. Now, we know that they want to make the game safe. That is certainly a reasonable thing to expect. What the word egregious means to any individual official or group of officials is open to interpretation, and that's what makes this a very dangerous rule to pass, in my opinion. What does very egregious mean? It might mean one thing to someone and something different to another official, and it could change the outcome of a division or a playoff or a wild card deciding game. I have a big concern with that. Another new rule, they're going to have centralized replay. The senior vice president of officiating, Dean Blandino, and his supervisory crew will work from the league's New York Command Center. Rather than being at every game, there's just going to be everything fed back to the New York Command Center. Referees will participate in the conversation via wireless headsets and a video tablet rather than going under the sideline hood. That change is going to take effect this year, and they expect that the change will not take longer. This is a commitment to quicker review turnarounds that could shave up to a minute to a minute and a half off of each game. So that's another new rule. Overtime is going to be shortened to 10 minutes. That's another one. The possible rule on the celebration, as I mentioned, they may tweak the celebration rules, or technically the anti-celebration rules. But the one that I want to talk about is the new ban on leaping over the offensive line in order to try to block a field goal or an extra point. This is going to be outlawed. According to league officials, the owners are almost unanimous in this. Almost unanimous in that it is too dangerous for somebody to jump over the offensive line in order to beat the snap into the backfield, or at least time it up so that they can kind of get back there at the same time. And block what, again, could be a potential game-winning field goal or extra point, whether it be in the fourth quarter when you're trying to literally stop a loss, or earlier in a game where it becomes the margin of victory. But they are banning the leaping over the offensive line. Their argument is that it is just too dangerous for somebody to be up in the air like that. For if an offensive lineman decides, I have to stop that guy, and as the ball is snapped, and the leaper is over the offensive line, and the offensive lineman raises up and nicks his heels or his knees or whatever, it could send him head over heels, flipping in midair and possibly landing on his head. I'm not kidding here. This is what they're saying we have to stop. We don't want guys being flipped in the air. It is one of the dumbest things that I've ever heard of. Stop changing my game. NFL, competition committee, officials, owners, stop changing my game. I'm watching professional football, not checkers, not trouble, not board games, not hopscotch. Guys are allowed to use their athleticism to make plays. It's always been encouraged. Now we're telling them they can't leave their feet because they might get flipped and land on their head. Here's the report from ESPN. The league's competition committee joined players in expressing concerns about the safety risks of the leaping strategy that proliferated last season. Although it didn't happen in 2016, they feared a player could be flipped in the air by blockers as they rose from their stances and potentially land awkwardly. The strategy will be expressly barred in the 2017 NFL rulebook. Seattle Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner, who has perfected the leap over the line to block kicks, tweeted last night on the rule change, quote, "We are creative. We will find another way." Teammate Cam Chancellor like of the Seahawks tweeted, "No fun league. How can you entertain if you are governed by people who never broke a bone before? Hashtag, they don't understand. Hashtag NFL." Love that from Cam Chancellor. Now, I want to make sure I understand this clearly. And Jim and Frank, if you can weigh in on this when I'm done, and you can too at 866-240-1065. We'll try to get you up and on the radio. They're suggesting that you shouldn't be allowed to leap over the line because you might get flipped and land awkwardly. What I want to know is it possible to get flipped and land awkwardly when a running back or a quarterback knows that a collision is coming at the goal line as they are running for the end zone and they take that flying leap to cross the plane to get over the goal line to score a touchdown? Is that going to be banned? Because that flying leap has indeed led to people being hit low, you know, in their feet or leg area, causing their entire body to, you know, either helicopter, kind of like Nat Moore once did, or to be flipped upside down to land on their neck or on their back or in some other awkward way. Are we going to say you can't leap at the goal line anymore? What about that high pass? What about that really high pass down the sideline, down the right sideline, and the graceful 6'5" Julio Jones rising up at the peak of his leaping ability, rises up there to pull down that Matt Ryan pass, but a safety or a cornerback could, in trying to break up that play, knowing they're not allowed to hit him up high, by the way, and probably couldn't reach up that high anyway because big Julio can get up, hits them in the legs and causes him to flip upside down. It hasn't happened quite that way yet, but it could. Should we ban leaping for high passes? How about that defensive lineman who's rushing the passer, rushing, he can't quite get where he wants to be, but he does see the quarterback pull his arm back and gets ready to let one fly, and that defensive lineman leaps as high as he can, hands in the air, to try to block and bat that pass down. I think I've seen J.J. Watt do that a time or 200. What about if somebody hits him low and he lands awkwardly? They're taking leaping out of football. They're taking jumping out of football because even though, and I'll repeat it again, it didn't happen in 2016, the competition committee fears it could. It could happen that somebody might be flipped while they're in the air and thus land awkwardly, causing an injury. And since we don't want there to be injuries in football, well, we're going to take that possibility away by taking the leaping away. How on God's green earth are they still going to be able to call this football in 5 years at the pace that they are going, taking everything athletic and physical and strong and hard-hitting out of the game? You want to know one of the reasons why ratings fell last year? People blamed all kinds of things. Some people blamed Colin Kaepernick and the league's, you know, indifference toward his disrespect of the flag and the military and police, et cetera, et cetera. Some people blamed other, you know, sports, baseball, taking some of the viewers away, all kinds of different. Can I just tell you one of the reasons why is I think that the average American fan is getting sick and freaking tired of you jacking with the game that they have come to know and love and jacking with the game that each and every one of these players knows they are going into when they sign their name on the dotted line of their contract. They know it's a violent game. They know they could land awkwardly. They know they could get hit in the head or neck. But they choose to do that because it's the sport they play. You know, every boxer that's ever put his name on a contract for a fight knows he's going to get punched in the face multiple times in a fight, even if he wins. And it could cause concussions. And who knows, maybe even, even being knocked out and gasp, landing awkwardly. But they don't take the punching out of boxing. How can you take the athleticism away from athletes like Bobby Wagner and other players who are able to leap the offensive line and go in and block kicks, taking points off of the board for their opponents because you're afraid of them getting hurt? I can't tell you how fed up I am with this stuff. Gentlemen, go ahead.
You know, and my first thought is, I'm glad you pointed out all the other things that leaping can come in involved in.
And that's not even all of them. Those are just the ones I thought of.
As you were going through the list,
Yeah. You
know what play popped into my head? Browns fans, you'll remember this one. What? 1989 playoffs at the stadium, the famed where Don Deeby of the Bills, he goes up, he tries to leap for that catch, lands smack on his head. It's still one of the greatest hits videos you could ever see to this day. That was 1989. That was him leaping to catch a pass.
That's right.
And those are the most dangerous spots if you're going to be talking about leaping. Not anywhere near what possibly could happen. I guess it's possible on the melee that is the lines crashing on a field goal or extra point try. Right. Which means if they're going to ban leaping, they're going after the wrong part of it, first off. So they don't even know what to incorrectly fix. You know what I'm saying?
They're fixing something that isn't broken.
Exactly.
Because it's never happened. But it could. It could. And there could be another BB.
So that's
And there could be, like I said, any number of scenarios in which somebody leaps. And, you know, how many times have we seen guys hurdle?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's illegal at the high school level, right? It's a penalty hurdle somebody at the high school level. I believe in Ohio football. I know it is in the younger grades. I know it is in, like, junior high football. I'm assuming it is in the high school level as well. But they say it's for the player's safety. Now, when you're a young kid, you're trying to hurdle somebody, and you don't have the athleticism you think you do, and maybe you kick somebody in the face the way Antonio Brown once did to the Browns punter.
Right.
maybe that's why at the younger levels. But we see it all the time in the college game.
Sure.
We see it all the time in the professional game. Are they going to outlaw hurdling the defensive player that you're trying to make a move on?
You also brought
up... gosh darn well better if you have any hope of consistency in your rules. Because it's much more likely that the tackler is going to see you go up and raise up high and flip you that way on the hurdle than an offensive lineman is as the leaper tries to get through.
And what you just described is why at the lower levels, that's why you're not allowed to hurdle. What you just described is why. Another one with the leaping that you brought up.
Real quick, so we can get a couple closer.
The one goal line. Let's cram it in there. We got to get this half a yard, and they're leaping over the line.
Why isn't that just like you said on a goal line play. We see that all the time. Walter Payton, I think, was the best. Yeah, he was my favorite.
So my point is, they're not even addressing the correct part of leaping if it's about danger. You know, they're not even addressing the correct part, which annoys me before I get into the rest
of
the stuff that I mostly agree with you on.
They're addressing the thing that hasn't happened.
You're right, exactly.
And by the way, how many times per game do we actually see somebody trying to leap the line and actually go make that block that way? Only in extraordinary situations where field goals,
work then.
Game-winning field goals are on the line, all that sort of thing. So, you're right. Let me get a couple of these in before we wrap it up here. Steven Toledo, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What say you?
How you guys doing today?
Good, man. What's up? We don't have a ton of time. Well, what's going on?
Well, here's what I think is hilarious. There's been more injuries on celebration than this play. And, the NFL's like, ooh, you can't jump over the center, but, gosh, the guy makes a sack. Or what was it, like Steven Tulloch tore his ACL?
Yep.
Martin Gramatica hit a 40-yard field goal.
Martin Gramatica after the field goal, yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, are we going to take those out, too? Because, hey, they got hurt.
And it could happen again, so therefore, no jumping for joy. What if you jump for joy after a big field goal and land awkwardly on your knee anterior ACL? Martin Gramatica did it, so from now on, touchdowns, field goals, no leaping for joy because you might land awkwardly. Steve, that's a brilliant point, my friend. Thanks for the call. Let me go to Bowling Green next. Troy, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, Troy, let her rip.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
They get paid to make athletic plays. Let them make plays.
Exactly. Isn't that kind of the name of the game?
Yeah. I mean, and the reason they get paid the money they get paid to do it is because they can do things that normal guys walking the streets can't do.
Right.
And John Elway got broken half in a Super Bowl diving across the line, and he was airborne. I mean, why are we protecting a linebacker that can take a hit as well as anybody?
Do you remember the Nat Moore play that I was talking about from the Dolphins back in the early 80s?
Yeah, and what about the Bengals receiver that flipped? Remember, did the flip into the end zone? He completely jumped over the guy. I mean, same thing. He left his
feet and very easily could have gotten clipped and then caught came down awkwardly and injured something seriously. Troy, great point. John and Wasion. John, I've only got a minute. In fact, I got less than a minute, but I want to get you on. What did you want to say, John?
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Bob. I really appreciate it. If we're not going to let the players make plays and potentially block people, then why are we even still playing the game? Can't we just turn it into flag football if we're not going to let them?
Yeah.
Let him play. Let him jump. I mean.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. You know what? By this logic, John, and thank you for the call to wrap it up. And guys, by this logic, it would be like the NBA saying no more alley-oops. Do you know how high a guy has to jump to go up there and catch a pass and come down and dunk it? Do you know how easy it would be for him to land awkwardly, injuring himself? No more alley-oops, man. We can't ask a guy to be that high in the air and that athletic because it might lead to injury. Are you kidding me? The NFL, no fun league. Cam Chancellor is 100% right. These people just don't understand the sport of football. And for crying out loud, they run it. That's it. It's all the time we got. Stay where you are. Drive Time's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.